Hello and welcome to Talking Spirits Podcast episode 12, the final episode of season 1. After the last couple of episodes have all been in German, here's finally one in English again. My guest today is the Portuguese psychotherapist and bassist Nuno Encarnação. I met Nuno about a year ago through the Portuguese singer Diana Silveira, and we got along with each other really well and had lots of interesting online conversations. So it was obvious that I felt like it would be a great thing to have Nuno as a guest on the show. I'm very happy that he immediately agreed to do it. The conversation you are about to listen to was recorded on 17th of April, and we are, among many other things, discussing Nuno's love towards the bass and towards music, the Portuguese music scene, how he came to become a psychologist, the psychological effects of COVID-19, and the political and societal situation in Portugal nowadays. We are hoping that you will enjoy listening as much as we enjoyed talking. Hi Nuno, welcome to the Talking Spirits podcast. I'm very happy that you are taking the time to be my guest today.
Thank you, Armin. I'm happy to be here talking to you also.
Nuno, you are a bass player, but you are also a psychotherapist. But since you happen to be the first bass player to be a guest on my show, maybe we start with talking bass. So I would like to know, how did music come to your life and why and how did you choose to be a bass player?
Music has always been a part of my life since I was a young boy. My parents, they always listened to a lot of music. We always had a lot of music in our house. Although neither of them was a musician, neither of them played any instrument. But we were always listening to music. Even when I was a young boy, I liked musical toys. I had a melodica that I used to try to learn songs and experiment with sounds on it. Then at the age of 6, I started to play the piano. I had lessons up until I was 8 years old, but I had to stop back then because we couldn't afford the lessons anymore. Then at the age of 10, I got a guitar. And I started to learn to play acoustic guitar. I went to the conservatory at 11. I didn't last that very long because they always teach all those technical classical things, but I wanted to play songs from the radio, the tunes that I was hearing. So I didn't have the patience back then to rehearse and to practice and all that. So I just went to learn with some friends of mine to learn chords and that. Then at about the age of 14, I bought a bass because I always liked the sound of the bass. I listened to a lot of music back then, pop music. I listened to a lot of pop music from the 80s where the bass was very present. You can hear all those bass lines. So I always liked the sound of the bass. My brother always also bought a drum back then, and we started to learn together how to play together. Then I got into bass lessons with a private teacher. I got into some local bands, rock bands. It was the grunge scene here in the, you know, Algarve in Portugal also. Even when I went to the university to take my course, my psychology course in Lisbon, I joined some local bands back then. Had a band also that's even we recorded an album and we played all around Portugal. I then, when I finished my course, I started to work. And at the time, I had left my band that I had back then, and I started to concentrate on working and earning money and buying a house. So the bass was a bit left behind. I stopped playing I didn't play bass for around 10 years. But in 2014, a friend of mine that I used to play in one of my old bands, he invited me to play with him again. He said that he wanted me to get back to music, and he really loved when we played together back then. So I started playing again, and after that, I didn't stop until now. So
yeah,
music is always present in my life.
You just said that you had like a long break. When you started playing again, how was it? I mean, was it difficult for you to come back to it, or was it more like riding a bike? If you don't do it for a long time and you go back to it, it comes back naturally.
It was a little bit difficult because you have a lot of muscle memory that wasn't there anymore. I wanted to do some things and my fingers just didn't react to it. I had to restart certain techniques and so. But it was good because it gave me also a bit of a freshness, you know, because sometimes when we do the same thing a lot of time, it's like, okay, it's not new. We aren't learning that much. So it was a sensation of relearning, rediscovering new things. It took a little while. Eventually, I restarted to get back on business.
Yeah, I mean,
and, I think I've evolved. Maybe back then I did certain things that now I can't do because it's different. Back then I used to practice a lot of hours a day, you know, 5-6 hours a day. You were at home, you just went to your instrument and play. So certain things were easier back then. I don't have that time right now. But in other ways, I think I got better musically, and not being that when you're younger, you're like, oh, I want to get the right chops, I want to play faster, I want to put a lot of notes, you know? I want to put a lot of notes, as much notes as I can get in the music, and now I just try to play the right note. Sometimes I'm playing, I'm recording, and then I go listening, and I think, oh, man, too much. It's too much. Let's go back. Let's cut this and this and this and this.
Yeah. I mean, I know the problem for sure. But with age, we get a little bit more peaceful. People who become bassists because they love bass and they love the frequencies like you described it before, usually they have a certain connection, special connection to the instrument. And also I think that this connection also shows in their character, you know, in the personality. So would you agree with me? And if yes, how would you describe it from your perspective?
Yes, I totally agree with you. especially because I know a lot of bass players, and it's really it's fun to see how their personalities manifest itself when they are playing. I know some guys that I'm usually a more calm person. I'm a bit more relaxed in the way that I am, that I deal with things. And I think that's reflects in the way that I play. I'm not that bass player that likes to be in the front and likes to show off and likes to put a lot of notes and fast notes and things like that. But I know other bass players that are exactly the opposite. They like to show off. They like to be at front. They like to play as many as they can and in the shortest amount of time, you know. I totally agree that the way that you are, the personality, your personality reflects in the way that you play.
I know that you also love blues music a lot. Could you talk about the blues and what the blues means to you and why you have such a connection to this type of music?
Well, blues is essentially a type of music that Demands a lot of feeling. Okay, how can we say? It's not that type of music that demands you to play a lot. In fact, what I really love about the blues, it's held you a bit back. Just start slow, you know, last notes. You just start building. You build the song the way that song evolves. You start building the song from there. Start slow, you last note, so the dynamics are lower, and you can go with the flow and start raising the dynamics, putting more stuff on it, and just dropping again. You go with the feeling, you go with the song, and the few types of music allows you to do that. In Portugal, we have a type of music. I don't know if you know. It's called fado.
Fado, yes, yes,
yes.
Of course.
It's very sentimental. It's very bluesy in the core feeling, you know. So
yeah.
It's easy for me to connect to the blues because I also connect with fado, with the feeling that's behind it. It's very similar. It's not the same. It's very similar in the feeling that lies below.
How would you describe the music scene in Portugal and the situation for musicians nowadays?
You have before coronavirus and the present situation. Well, Portugal is, I think it is a little bit like Germany in a way. That is a place where we have a lot of cultures that come here, and they mix with the local culture. Here in Portugal, we have a cultural, an historical past with the colonies, with the Portuguese people. We had a lot with the discovery travels. We had contact with many cultures, many places, and those reflect in our local culture. We have here in music, we have a lot of African influences, Brazilian, have influences from Spain. We have a lot of mixtures of culture references. So that reflects a lot in the musical scene here in Portugal. Well, we have a lot of bands, of people creating, and different type of music from African influences, from Brazilian influences, from even American, Spanish. I don't know. It's a big mix of influences, and that helps build the character of the local musicians, because many of us are very eclectic. You know, we play a lot of music styles, we play a lot of sound, we can adjust and adapt to a lot of styles. In Algarve, where we have a local scene, this is not a very big region. But there's a lot of musicians living here because it's a tourist area with a lot of events. The night here, the events at night is very, very rich, especially in the summer. So there's a lot of musicians here that are playing, that are working in bars, in hotels, in events. And unfortunately, that life, that musical life, now it's completely stopped because no one plays. No one working right now, and it's not a matter of playing music right now. Not a matter of satisfying the needs to make music. For some, it's a matter of survival. Some simply aren't working, aren't earning money. Their allowances are coming to an end, and they don't know how they're going to eat the next month. We aren't seeing the lights in the end of the tunnel. concerning the cultural events. We can see the light in the end of the tunnel concerning other activities, but the cultural events, the music scene, it's completely stopped. We don't know when it's going to open again.
How would you see the music scene in Portugal also from the sense of the music business?
Here, the musical scene is not very big, so there isn't much room for certain artists to be able to play and earn enough money for you to make original music, get a life, and earn a life with it. So most of the musicians they play in covers bands, they play in bars. Also, some of them play with some of those artists. It's not very easy for an original artist to get through and get to a certain point where he can make a living of it just for making his own music. When you're not in central regions like Lisbon or Porto, that are regions where you the music scene, the producers and the promoters, they all are centered there. When you don't belong to that area, it's more difficult for you to have your own project and go outside and so. And also, there aren't many Portuguese bands that get outside of Portugal, get into international in the international circuit. Sometimes most of the Portuguese artists, they go into the international circuits when they play Fado or New Fado into the world music scene. But other bands, other projects, they go outside to play with the local Portuguese communities in other countries. The artists go from here in Portugal to play to other Portuguese people in other countries like France, to Germany.
As we have mentioned before, you are working as a psychotherapist. So how would you explain your fascination with psychology? And what was the reason for you to choose psychology over music in terms of a career?
Psychology has always been an interest of mine. My mother is a social worker, social assistant, and she works in the social area. So I always had an influence in the social issues. And I always had a certain curiosity what makes people be what they are, you know. I was always that type of person that all of my friends like to talk with and when they wanted to, you know. Even before, you know, and they said that I was a good listener and I gave good advice, but that helped building in me that feeling that psychology was a good learning area and the right choice for me in terms of going to the university, having a course and having a profession future. When I got into the university, I was more certain, although psychology here in Portugal is not a very safe professional path, because there are a lot of psychologists and not many work opportunities. But I eventually got lucky. And after I finished my course, I eventually started to work in the place where I work right now. It's a residential care unit for children and adolescents. And from that, I just started to make my path in the psychology. But it's funny because when I was studying, I was also playing at the time. And eventually, my how do you say, my thesis, my end of course thesis, the work that I made at the end of my course was about psychology and music. I even got that work and published a book. It's called Between Silence and Words, Psychoanalytic Variations About Music. And I used the psychoanalytic theory to think a little bit about music and the things that work around it. Not in a music therapy kind of approach, but more in the place that music lives in our psychic life.
Yeah, there's a big connection between those two, I think. That's why I wanted to ask you also if, you know, the insights you won in your path as a psychologist did have an effect on you as a musician.
It helps you connect more with yourself. And also music makes the other way, because music is the language of emotion. You can say with music what you cannot say with words. So that's when we work with people, when we try to help people through psychology, you're trying to work with their emotions, to listen to their emotion. You're trying to listen not only to what they're saying to you verbally, directly, but also what they're expressing, what their underlying meaning, what's below there. And essentially, music is that you communicate in a way that you don't need to speak, you don't need to talk, you know. And when we are in a band, and you obviously know that when we are playing, you can feel where the other guy is going. Feel where what the other guy is asking him, if he wants to raise the dynamics of the music, if he wants to lower it, if he wants more mellow feeling. You even can feel how the person is there that day by the way that he's playing. You know, both these areas interconnect in this way. At least for me, that's how it makes sense.
If you talk about your line of work, you mentioned that you are working with kids. Maybe if you like, you could share something about what you do exactly. And then I would like to ask you, how do you perceive the situation of a young person in the nowadays society, where everything is so crazy and fast, and where so many impressions and challenges which are posed to us every day?
I work in a residential care home for children and adolescents. So these children and adolescents, they need to be taken off their families because something happened there. So they couldn't live with their families anymore. And they are taken from those places, and they are transferred to this unit. That's a residential unit. We have up to 18 young people living there, from children and adolescents. So they go there and they live there with us. And we try to work with them some of the issues that led them to be there. And we try to help them cope with all those feelings, all those emotions. And we try to find what we call new life projects that eventually will lead for them to leave this institution, this residential care facility. And these life projects can be the return to their original families, if those original families can work with us through their own issues and can overcome the difficulties that created the conditions for the children to come to the place where I work, And if we can overcome those difficulties, then the children can return to their homes and eventually have better life opportunities than they had before they went to our institution. If those children cannot return to their families, then we try to arrange other solutions that can pass by an uncle, a grandmother, a grandfather, an older brother, if they have their lives more organized, or even eventually go to adoption, or with some of the older adolescents, we can try working with them to try to help them autonomize themselves and have other life opportunities that they can build without relying on their own family. I try to help all these young people to have a different course of action than the one different from the one that eventually led them there. Concerning the nowadays demands on the young people, not only on this specific type of group that I work with, but eventually more general, I think this is a very challenging times for all of us. First, one thing that I feel is that we oscillate between two opposite types of working. At one side, we give a lot of freedom for some of our young people, freedom to go online, to access information, to be with other person. That's a sense of freedom, of not just freedom, but eventually some lack of limit. You know, it's like we can do anything that we want. But at the other time, especially the parents, they have all these protecting movements towards the young people that also keep them in some sort of dependent state that balances this sense of I can do anything, but at the same time, there are a lot of things that I can't do. Young people feel they have less limits than the generations before, but are much less autonomous by itself. They have less competences to choose, to decide, to make more fundamental decisions in things. So this is a problem. We have young people that are confronted with the openness of choices before them, but they lack the competence to make better decisions because they don't have that practical freedom to make the decisions by themselves, to learn from their own errors sometimes, and that eventually raises a lot of challenges.
We are now in the midst of a global pandemic, and it's, at least in our time, it's a very unprecedented situation, which has never been here before. And so my question would be, how would you describe the effects of such situation from a psychological point of view?
From the first point, we've seen here many stages of reacting to this situation. First, we saw a lot of people minimizing things. Denial was one of the reactions that some people made concerning these present events. But then after denial came a lot of fear. So that fear led to the building of internal anxieties that obviously led to people having trouble sleeping, feeling anxious during the day, feeling a lot of symptoms that were mixed in their minds and led them to believe that they were sick in some kind of way. So this anxiety eventually was good in a certain way, because it led to a lot of protective behavior. But obviously, when it started to grow in certain peoples, obviously it led to other types of problems. And this eventually started to happen more and more. Thinking globally, when the confinement started to be the rule, the overall rule here, people started to try to adapt to this new type of life. It's not easy, obviously, because when you're confined to a small place, eventually you start to feel more anxious. Sometimes you start to think more of the things that can go bad and can the problems that you have in yourself, in your life, not only concerning the corona, but also other type of problems. So there's also the risk of evolving to depression and this type of feelings. But eventually we need to work on the types of ways to occupy yourself physically, mentally, of organizing your day also, so that you can cope with this long periods of being at home. And as a psychologist, with the people that I work with, we try to provide that type of organization, of daily organization, of daily schedule to do so. In the institution where I work, we try to do that with the children and young people that we have there. I also try to support the staff. Very important, because the people that work with these children, also they need to be taken care of. They need to be supported. They need to be helped going through these phases, because they need to be available for these children, emotionally available for these children. Also, a part of my work is with the staff to help them cope with the demands of working in this current situation, and also their own personal feelings and their own personal worries.
Let's talk about politics for a little bit, because for the last couple of years, there's a very alarming tendency in Europe, which can be observed, meaning that the right-wing parties are on the rise. What we hear in the news in Germany is that this is not the case in Portugal, which would mean that the Portuguese political establishment has found a way to deal with this problem in a different way than other countries do. Would you agree with this? And if yes, what can you say about it? What's different in Portugal?
I wish that was true, because we still haven't had a major rise in the populist political area. But we are seeing now that the main populists party here in Portugal is getting a lot of attention, and a lot of people, especially because this type of movements they start differently from what used to be the political space or the political scene, because the typical political space is the media, you know. It's the television, it's the newspapers,
radio.
And these new movements, they start in other type of media. Starts online, they start on the social network. And on those social networks, unfortunately, we are seeing a lot of people manifesting openly right-wing type of views and right-wing type of thoughts and all that. People here, I think this is global. Everyone thinks that the politics are only concerned with their own interests. They're only concerned with getting money or getting positions or getting power to the people of their party, to their relatives or so. And this has been the fertile soil for this type of thoughts and this type of political speech to get and start throwing seeds and start to grow among many people. I know people, some of them are my friends, that share some of those views, because it's easy to beat this politician or that area. It's easy to say that the government doesn't work for us. It's easy to say that we pay too many taxes and the taxes are stolen by the government, and they give the money to the companies that they want, and all of them are taking what we work, what we earn. It's easy to say that. It's not so easy to see that certain decisions obviously need to be made. Not everything can be offered or provided. I don't want to make an apology of the politicians, because I think that they have their own share of guilt in all that it's happening now. But when we mix these feelings, when we mix these ideas, when we mix these representations of the classic political parties as bad groups of people, when you mix this with the social network and the diffusion of fake news, people are more willing to believe in conspiracy theories and what fake news sites are providing, then they are more inclined to believe in that than in certified or fundamented sources. Then it's easy for these type of thoughts to grow. But here in Portugal, we had the dictatorship type of government for many years, and we still have in ourselves this notion that certain types of political ideas are not good for the people. Although this is also a crisis for the political system, but also a crisis for the more classical political currents, you know, like right or left. And the left wing, let's say this, the more concerned with the social issues, the more concerned with the social questions, it's also going through a crisis right now, an identity crisis. I think that as a society, we have reached a certain state of well-being that has eventually taken off some of the issues that the left wing usually breaks out. The left wing has now started to become involved with certain type of issues that are also important, but are not what most people are concerned with in their daily life. The minority things. And it's important, it's very important that these issues are approached and are worked through. But sometimes the way that these issues are being brought to discussion presents the separation between groups, you know, these opposites, also allows for an opposite discussion and creates fractures that also allow for this right wing to grow. the political discourse, it's getting more extreme right now. Although in the constitution of the government and the assembly, with the deputies and so, we don't see that reflected. But for the first time in many years, we have one party that's from the right wing that is represented in the parliament. For us, that we have a culture of revolutionary ideals from the 25 of April. It's a very important date here in Portugal that represents us coming out of the dictatorship, represents ideals of freedom, of solidarity, of orientation for a common well-being. For us in Portugal to have, for the first time, right-wing, openly declared right-wing party represented in the parliament, it's a very important historical first step. From the things that we've seen, and from the things that I've been seeing here and been experiencing on social media, I think that the next elections will show a growth in this type of party.
I wanted to ask, because you mentioned the dictatorship of Salazar, what do you think, like, how this is relating to the situation now? Because usually one would like to think that we learn from history, but in many cases it's just sadly not the case. And so do you see a relation between the situation right now to the past?
I see a relation. Unfortunately, history needs to be lived through, needs to be kept alive, and the right messages needs to come through. What I've been seeing here in Portugal is like a cleaning of the dictatorship history, you know? It's a whitening of that past. People tend to compare the days of the dictatorship as days where there was no corruption. You know, there's a myth involving Salazar that says that he was like a pure politician. He made an economic miracle. When we passed from the monarchy to the republic, the first years in the first 20 to 30 years of the 20th century, the first republic, as we call it, it was a mess. Politically, it was a mess. Socially, it was a mess. Economically, it was a mess. You know, and eventually, it led to our country to go bankrupt. And Salazar was the Ministry of Finances in the last government of the first monarchy, first republic. Sorry, he laid a plan. An economic plan in function in the country that eventually led Portugal out of the bankruptcy. Very strict plan, and he gained a lot of power, a lot of political power back then. And it was also the time when the first dictatorships in Europe started to emerge. Franco, Mussolini, Hitler. It was a time where all these strong political leaders started to appear in the European history, and Salazar was one of them. He gained a lot of power because he took over the country's finances and eventually led to the recovery. But in this miracle financial recovery is what helps build like a mythical representation of Salazar as a great politician, as a great economic genius. All that he made was the economical politics of an accountant. It's like we need to puts all the money, to keep all the money that we can to ourselves, gets most money and spend the least of it. In simple terms, this was the Salazar's economical politics. In the first years, this was important and eventually led to Portugal getting out of bankruptcy. But in the rest of the years, this was not good. There was a lot of poverty here in Portugal. In the times of Salazar, there was like an elite, administrative elite that worked for the government, that had a lot of rights and that believed themselves to be superior. And then the rest of the people, they lived really bad. My wife's father, he only had a pair of shoes when he was about 10 years old, was the first pair of shoes that he had. He only wore it to go to church or events or so. And this was how it was back then. This was how it was in the time of Salazar. And we need to see one thing. Back then, Portugal was a colonial empire. Back then, Portugal was not only this little place. We had colonies in Africa. We had colonies in India. We had Macau in China. One of the things that Portugal as a country doesn't have, obviously, is the access to prime matters like oil or coal. But that we had all of that in the colonies. We had Angola. Angola is one of the richest countries in matter of oil and precious stones and minerals in Africa. How is it that with such an access to a big market, such an access to resources, you know, we had such a poor country? All that richness was not invested. And we, right now, we are paying the failure of the economical politics of the years of Salazar. Also, other myths come around. Oh, he was poor. He only received a minimal wage or so. He didn't earn money, but he lived as a king. Other myths. There was no corruption in Salazar times. It's a huge lie. Most of the corruption system that we see nowadays was created, was made in those times. Maybe Salazar wasn't corrupt, but he didn't need it. Most dictatorships have an administrative monster below them.
Sadly, you can come to the conclusion that it's always the same with this type of things.
That's exactly where these new right-wing movements are connecting. People are insatisfied. People think this is always the same. It's always the same problems. These guys aren't going to solve our problems. Then there comes another guy that says exactly what you're saying. You know, they take what the common people say. They take what the common people concerns about. They feed on their frustrations, and they build on it. They show, they say, okay, I'm like you, I feel the same, those are the bad guys, we are the ones that are against the bad guys, we are like you, and we are going to change all this. We are going to put all those bad guys in jail, we're going to take them out. And we're going to make things right, and we're going to provide for everyone, and we're going to be the best ones around.
Yeah, we can just hope that people are willing to be conscious about what's really happening, or to really go into things and inform themselves to understand what's really happening, and hopefully to come to the conclusion that these type of politicians or parties are not the ones who will bring prosperity and peace in the end. As you mentioned earlier, you are from the Algarve, And it's a region in Portugal which is very famous for the beauty of its nature. That's why people from all over the world like to come there for vacations. You have been born and you grew up in this region. So how would you describe it from your point of view? And how would you describe your personal connection to it?
First, I think that the most important connection that we feel here in Algarve is with the sea, you know, with the beaches, with the sea. You have all things near each other. You don't need to go very far to go to a countryside. You don't need to go very far to go to a beach. You don't need to. Things are quiet here. Not that much problems. When I was young, there was a time, obviously, when you're younger, you like to go out, you like to go out with your friends, go into the night, have some drinks and all that. And obviously, in the summer, this just goes amazingly crowded and it's super wild and the nights are really, really wild. So it was very, very good to be here and meet all kinds of people, because one of the things that is interesting here in Algarve is that with the local people, we end up meeting people from many different countries. So you could go out in the night and meeting someone from England or someone from Germany or someone from Holland or so. So we could connect and interact with many different types of persons from different cultures. And one thing that's really interesting here in Algarve is that we have a lot of foreign communities here, not only immigrants from the colonies, the former colonies, from Africa or from Brazil or so, but we have people from England, communities of English people here, have communities of people from Germany, from Holland, big community from Holland that lives here in Algarve. There are building communities here of French people also, from Finland. There are a lot of people that have chosen to come here and have bought homes here. Some are secondary homes, other are their residences here in Algarve from now on. And these communities also have a sort of cultural medium that also is interesting to see how it influences the Algarve in itself. We have, concerning tourists, we have different types of tourism here in Algarve, which is also interesting because you can have more beach tourism with all those hotels near the beaches and all that. But you also have more rural tourism in the interior. We have places here in the interior that is more connected to nature. That's it's really, really nice to be at. And we also have other types of beaches that are not so well known. For me, are my preferred ones, you know, because not all the people. But you have the South Shore, you know, and then you have the Southwest Shore that starts in Sagres and starts to rise up north. And that Southwest Shore, it's amazing, you know, in the nature, the landscapes, it's incredible. The sea is much cooler than the South Shore, and also it's braver, but it's very good. And for the people that like to surf and that, it's the best beaches are there. And for those that like to see nature, to see landscapes, to do some trekking, because you have all this this path that goes through the shore. It's an amazing place to be at.
Yeah, but so you never considered going somewhere else. I mean, you said that you went to Lisboa for studies, but you never considered to live in a different country, for instance.
I've considered that. I've considered that before, especially when when you're younger and you're starting to think of different professional perspectives. I thought of going to England to study there to make a PhD in psychology, because I like very much some of the universities that they have there. But it's nice to live here. I like it. It's easygoing. I like the things that you can do here, you know. Sometimes we feel we are a bit far from certain things. Concerning the industry, that's one of the things that we are not well provided here in Algarve.
If you think about the future for yourself, do you have a certain, like, let's say, do you have any special dreams or wishes or ideas which you have not realized so far?
Obviously, I would like to travel a lot more. That's one of the things that I would really like to do, and I miss, you know, go traveling, meeting places, meeting people. That's really one of the things I would really like to do. So I would really like to keep evolving in a musical way. There's a project that I started, I became a part last year, that I'd really like for it to grow a bit more. It's essentially Portuguese music, more a sort of a novo fado. We would really like to take it to other places, get into the world music scene, and we can see a bit of the world and take some music to the world. Some read more, love more, you know.
Yeah.
I also have another hobby, another passion that I haven't told you, so, but I can share with you, because I make bonsai. I these days I've been working a lot of my bonsai. I have a lot of free time, you know. I have to take care of those little trees. And also I like to do this and to use this as a way of creating in another area, you know.
We have talked many things and we are now approaching the end of our conversation today. Is there something which you would like to share with our listeners to end the conversation?
Everyone stay safe and everyone keep positive. This isn't, it's funny because we were talking about populism. We were talking about the rise of all these extremist ideas and all such. But now we live a time when more than ever we need each other. Cannot be with people, but we need to connect with people. We need to feel close to other people. We need to feel that we're not alone. We need to feel that this is global. It's not a matter of being black, of being white, of being Chinese, of being English, of being Muslim, of being, Buddhist, of being American, of being Portuguese. It's not a matter of this. We're all on the same page here. People always talk about differences. Differences are important because differences make you who you are, different from me, you know, always, and also makes you a rich person because you have things that I don't have. Let's accept those differences and accept that those differences can make you an important person for me because you bring things that I don't have. Many of those things may be things that are lacking in my life.
I agree, and we need to see differences not as a problem, but rather than as an advantage. And it's good to see that it really works. So I would like to say thank you very much for taking the time and for the great conversation. My best wishes to you and to your family, and let's hope we can do this in real life sometime soon.
Okay, thank you, Armin. It was a pleasure to talk with you also. Okay, thank you.
You have just listened to Talking Spirits Podcast, episode number 12, with Nuno Encarnação and Armin Alić. Since episode number 12 was the final episode of season 1, I want to take the time and say a huge thank you to all of the great people who took the time to be my guests and who were so honest and open in the conversations. Also, I want to send a huge thank you to all of you who have been listening so far. I really enjoyed the ride and I learned a lot in the process. As I'm just preparing season 2, I'm looking forward a lot to more amazing guests and to stepping up my game a little bit, so I will be able to present to you even more interesting and better sounding conversations sometime soon. As usual, you can listen to all episodes on www.talkingspiritspodcast.com, where I also will be posting updates and details about season 2 very soon. Stay healthy and safe, and feel free to reach out if you want to talk. Bye!